Hello, I'm Angela, a newsreader on the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition of the Talking News is for Wednesday, the 18th of November, 2020.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightlust charity, Beacon Centre. A message to our listeners who receive the Talking News on CD in the post: this remains in paper envelopes and not the usual plastic wallets, so there's still no need to send anything back to us. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods: calling 01902 213 210, visiting our website www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. And reading this week, we have the new voice of writer Graham Fisher, alongside myself, Rob, Mina, Edward, Helen, David, Christine, Ian, Angela, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. In Sightlust news, we have a look at some new technological innovations. We have the Flashback Quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, and on this week in history with Flashback Roger, a look at how Wolverhampton avoided being bombed during the Blitz, a short story about extraterrestrial beings, and of course, the weather. However, we start this week with our first local news roundup, brought to you by Christine, Angela, and first up, Ian.
A number of people were arrested after police broke up a gathering of more than 150 anti-mask protesters in Wolverhampton city centre. The group were chanting "Masks off" and "Freedom," with some waving placards as they marched through the city. Officers from West Midlands Police were alerted to the gathering on Saturday and to an unauthorised drone being flown in the area. The officers spoke to those in attendance and asked them to move on due to not being able to give a reasonable excuse as to why they were breaching national lockdown restrictions. As a result of a large number deciding not to listen, the officers were forced to enforce the rules, and 12 arrests have been made to date, with those arrested taken into police custody. Superintendent Nick Rowe, the Silver Commander, said the rules had been enforced as a result of people not engaging with their instructions. He said, "We always seek to speak with people who are suspected of being in breach of the regulations. But when people are not working with us or listening to our instructions, then we must enforce the rules and arrest people where appropriate."
Health chiefs in the West Midlands and Staffordshire are preparing to roll out mass COVID testing after taking delivery of the first batch of 10,000 kits. Lateral flow tests with a turnaround time of under an hour have now been distributed to 67 parts of the country, including Wolverhampton, Dudley, Staffordshire and Birmingham. Clive Wright, the COVID regional convener for the West Midlands, said the kits were under the control of each local authority involved in the pilot scheme. He said it is up to each director of public health to determine how they're going to use them. They're using them differently in the authorities across the West Midlands, depending on their priorities and how the new technologies best match the need alongside the existing testing regime. What that will deliver is different approaches and the opportunity to learn from what works best. It's quite an exciting time in terms of testing and a huge step forward in terms of the numbers and the speed at which we can test. Wolverhampton Council is planning to focus on testing in places of worship, while Birmingham Council leader Ian Ward said the authority was setting up dedicated testing facilities for the kits to be deployed. Further batches of test kits are expected to follow in the coming weeks.
A government office could be set up in Wolverhampton, creating up to 1,000 jobs under proposals being considered by ministers, it has been revealed. Stuart Anderson said he had received positive feedback over his request. The proposals, if backed, would see the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government, MHCLG, set up a local office in Wolverhampton. It is hoped the move, discussed with Housing Secretary Robert Jenrick MP, would help the city recover from the impact of coronavirus. Mr Anderson, the MP for Wolverhampton South West, said, "I was elected on a manifesto to level up opportunities and unleash potential. Too many areas in Wolverhampton have been left behind for decades, and I have been working hard to attract more investment for our great city. I am delighted that the government is looking at setting up a base for one of its most influential departments in our great city. This is a step in the right direction, and if approved, it could see up to 1,000 jobs created for local people, and it would be a massive boost to the area as we look to recover from coronavirus. I will continue to engage with government ministers on these plans."
A hotel in Dudley has been ordered to close over breaching coronavirus rules and continuing reports of antisocial behaviour. The Himley Country Hotel has been forced to close for 28 days by Staffordshire County Council after posing a threat to public health from Friday until midnight on December the 10th. The School Road venue has been slapped with a temporary closure notice amid concerns of antisocial behaviour by Staffordshire Police and South Staffordshire Council, which comes into force on Saturday. Guests and staff at the hotel were not wearing face masks, and cleanliness standards throughout the hotel were described as very poor. Managers also displayed a disregard for public safety, council bosses said, as measures were not in place to keep people safe from COVID-19. Chief Inspector David Wayne from Staffordshire Police said the closure notice concerning antisocial behaviour was made amid outcry from residents in the area. He said, "We have been aware of reports of antisocial behaviour taking place in Himley and the surrounding area over the last few months. In response, we organised a residents' meeting in August to listen to their concerns, and we have been monitoring the area through regular police patrols."
The Financial Conduct Authority intends to take further action against failed outsourcer Carillion for misleading shareholders with false information. In a warning notice, the watchdog said that a number of senior executives were knowingly concerned in numerous breaches of market rules and had acted recklessly. These include disseminating information that gave false or misleading signals as to the value of its shares and failing to act with integrity towards its shareholders. Carillion, which had its headquarters in Wolverhampton, collapsed into administration in 2018 with liabilities of almost £7 billion. The firm was one of the UK's largest construction companies, employing around 43,000 staff globally, including 20,000 in Britain, and was known for having worked on the Royal Opera House, the Channel Tunnel, and the Tate Modern. It also offered many outsourcing services for the public sector, with contracts to provide school dinners, maintain and operate buildings and estates, security and housekeeping, as well as cleaning and catering at NHS hospitals. An inquiry into the collapse carried out by MPs described the collapse as a story of recklessness, hubris and greed, and said that the firm's business model was a relentless dash for cash. This warning notice does not constitute a financial decision, but if it does decide to take action against the company and the directors, the FCA is proposing public censure rather than a financial penalty. The use of a public censure is regarded as an important regulatory tool and is used to detail misconduct to raise public awareness of regulatory standards.
Three more local news bulletins coming up, but now it's time for our weekly update from Beacon.
Hi everyone. Another week of the current lockdown has passed, and as usual, we hope you are all keeping as happy and healthy as you can do, given the current circumstances. Taking the time to talk is important for us all right now. If you or someone you know is living with sight loss and could do with hearing a friendly voice, then get in touch. Our free telephone befriending service could be the lifeline you or they need during lockdown. If you want to find out more about the service or are interested in becoming one of our volunteer callers, get in touch. We've also got a range of other services which may be able to help people through the lockdown, so if you need assistance of any kind, please let us know. You can call us on 01902 880 111. Now, we've got some good news this week. In fact, We think it's amazing news. Our incredible supporters have completed our 10,000-mile challenge target in aid of Beacon. That's 10,000 miles run, swim, cycled or walked by people to support those living with sight loss. The support of those who've been fundraising for Beacon throughout this challenge this year means the world to us and our members, especially given the challenging times 2020 has brought for us all. You may have also seen it's recently been World Kindness Day. We took the opportunity to say a thank you to everyone who's supported us over the last few months. Whether you've made a donation, given your time to volunteer, made a smile with a kind word, or even sent cakes to our care team, your many acts of kindness have really meant the world to us. In other exciting news this week, we were delighted to be a part of the Black Country Chamber of Commerce Awards. We're so proud of our amazing team who were nominated in the Kindness in the Community category. Sadly, we didn't win, but we'd like to say a big well done to all the Beacon team and all of the finalists. That's all for now. Next week, we'll have details of how you can support Beacon over Christmas. We've been doing everything we can to support people with sight loss when they've needed us the most throughout the challenging 3 months we've faced. But our organisation has already lost £682,000 as a result of a pandemic. And sadly, we expect that figure to grow, as many of our usual festive fundraising events are unable to take place. Our Christmas lunches alone generate more than £7,000 to support people with sight loss. Hopefully, though, we can still help spread some festive cheer while enabling people to support Beacon at the same time. But we'll tell you all about it in our next roundup. Don't forget, there are now more ways than ever before to listen to our talking news. Via Alexa, just ask your Alexa-enabled device to play the Black Country Talking News. By telephone, ring 01902 213 210. Via our website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news. Or via the British Wireless for the Blind app. Thanks, everyone. Speak soon.
Thanks very much, Helen. More local news now from Christine and Ian. But first up, it's Angela.
A helpline offering advice and support to people across the Dudley Borough affected by the coronavirus outbreak has been reinstated. Dudley Council is working with Dudley Council for Voluntary Services, Citizens Advice Dudley and the Black Country Food Bank to offer this service. Callers will be able to get information, advice and support to ensure they can get vital food and medication, welfare, benefits and debt support services. The service is available for those who are self-isolating, may be feeling lonely or isolated, are unable to leave their homes, or struggling financially due to the pandemic. People can call 0300 3302 152 from Monday to Friday between 9:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. Councillor Patrick Harley, leader of Dudley Council, said, "Working together with our partners, we have reinstated the COVID-19 support line to help people during the lockdown and beyond. By calling this helpline, families and individuals will be able to get the advice and support they need, as well as help with essential food supplies. We continue to work together as a community in the fight against coronavirus, and I would take this chance to remind everyone that they can play their part in stopping the spread by continuing to follow government instructions. Residents and businesses can keep updated on the Council's latest response to the COVID-19 crisis at dudley.gov.uk/coronavirus.
Passengers are being advised about work starting next month to replace lifts at the Hawthorns railway station in Smethwick. The much-needed work will make step-free access more reliable to both station platforms. Work will start on Tuesday, December the 1st and continue through to March the 15th. Both lifts will be improved at the same time. During this time period, no step-free access will be available at the Hawthorne station. Anyone who needs step-free access to trains or trams should book assisted travel with West Midlands Railway. Where possible, passengers are advised to travel to Smethwick Galton Bridge, which will retain full step-free access throughout the work. Tom Wadsworth, Senior Asset Engineer for Buildings at Network Rail, said, "The lifts at the Hawthorns haven't been replaced since the rail station opened in 1995 and need to be upgraded to improve reliability for passengers."
A new three-lane drive-through click-and-collect service is to be set up at a Wolverhampton supermarket to keep staff and customers safe from coronavirus. Asda, on Jack Haywood Way in Wolverhampton, will have a three-lane canopy installed on the car park for people who order online and be able to pick up without entering the store. Bosses believe the new collection service will reduce the number of people going into the supermarket, making it safer for employees and the general public. The plans, which have been approved by Wolverhampton Council planners, also include the removal of grocery lockers currently on the site and the creation of five new bays on the car park. Customers will pull up under the grocery collection canopy in their cars and alert Asda staff to their presence via the intercom. An Asda employee will then come out of the store with the customer's shopping and help load the shopping into the customer's car. The canopy will provide cover for six customers' waiting/collection spaces. The aim is for more customers to be able to shop using the click and collect system. This will reduce numbers in store to help reduce colleague and customer exposure to COVID-19.
The dangers of fireworks have been highlighted after a stray rocket is believed to have caused a house fire. Emergency crews were called to the fire at Oakley Road in the Penn area of Wolverhampton after a firework went through an upstairs window. The blaze left the house with significant fire and smoke damage and an acrid smell of burning still hanging in the air around the house. Tayaba Bukhari lives next door to the house, and the 31-year-old spoke about the moment she realised her neighbour's house was on fire. She said, "I was sitting in my house and saw a lot of smoke outside, so I thought someone was doing a bonfire for fireworks night. Suddenly, there was a banging on my door and someone telling me that I have to get out now, which I initially refused to do as my husband was out and I have two young children. I then saw the smoke coming from the house and realised what was happening, so I got my children and we ran out of the house." Mrs. Bukhari said she had suffered from smoke inhalation after running out of the property and was tended to by ambulance staff. She said, "I have been cleaning my walls and furniture as they're all black from the smoke from the fire, which isn't too bad as it could have been a lot worse. I'm more concerned about fireworks and the damage they can do, because if a small thing can cause damage like that, they need to be regulated better."
Saddler's Peaky Blinder brand is coming home to the Black Country as a new £1 million spirits distillery is to open. Halewood Artisanal Spirits, which owns a majority share in Saddler's, the creator of Peaky Blinder's beer and spirits, is opening a brand new distillery at the Saddler's old site in Lye. The new £1 million distillery, which will be the first of its kind in the local area, will become the main production site for Saddler's award-winning Peaky Blinder spirit range. The move comes almost a year after Saddler's Brewery closed up its Lye site and moved its beer production to Cumbria. Their spirit range was produced at various sites across the country, but bosses made the decision to move back to the home of the Peaky Blinders in Dudley. And the pandemic hasn't impeded the move, with bosses saying they should have the spirits on the market by the end of the year, with the site now in full production. The first locally produced spirits are on track to go into the market at the end of the year. This includes Peaky Blinder Spiced Dry Gin and Black Spiced Rum, each one of which is named after an infamous character from the Peaky Blinder gang which lived in the area in the 1890s.
And there'll be more local news later, but now it's time to give our brain cells a workout. It's of course quiz time once again. So Mina, do you have everything in order?
Yes, I have. The questions are here, ready and waiting. So, if everybody is ready, let's begin. Question 1. The Suez Canal runs through which country? Question 2. What was the name of Disney's first cartoon? Question 3. In what year was the first part of International Space Station launched? Question 4. In what year was the fire that damaged Windsor Castle? Question 5. Who shot JR in the TV show Dallas? And finally, question 6. In what year was President J.F. Kennedy assassinated? As always, all the answers are included in Flashback Rogers, This Week in History section, and I'll be back to reveal whether you were correct. Good luck!
And Mina will be back with the answers later, but now we have more local news, and first up, Christine.
Dudley teenager Blessing Chitapa has been crowned the winner of The Voice UK. The 18-year-old singer, originally from Zimbabwe, was named as the winner during Saturday's episode of the ITV talent competition. She saw off competition from Johnny Brooks, who was coached by Sir Tom Jones, in the final. Blessing sang Robbie Williams' Angels and James Bay's Hold Back the River in the final. The latter song was a duet with her mentor, Ollie Mears. A tearful Blessing, whose parents are pastors at the Cornerstone Fellowship International Church in West Bromwich, said she is so happy to have sung on this stage. It has been an honour and my privilege, and it has been unforgettable, she added. After she sang Angels, Mears said, "You are just a phenomenal talent, and even I'm getting emotional here after that performance." Earlier in the series, Mears became Blessing's mentor after he was the only judge to turn his chair during her audition. Blessing said, "Winning the competition is my biggest achievement yet. I am so proud of how far I have come, and I'm so intrigued to see what the future holds for me," she added.
A tank which has been parked at an industrial estate for decades as a memorial to a local war hero is to get a new paint job. The Chieftain tank, which was used in the Gulf War, was first brought to Delph Industrial Estate in Briley Hill in 1994 by Tony Whittaker. The 76-year-old, who runs the industrial estate, originally purchased the tank in memory of Stanley Longmore, with whom he worked as an apprentice. Mr. Longmore served in the Second World War as part of the Desert Rats in North Africa. He was in the Staffordshire Regiment and rose to the rank of Sergeant Major. Mr. Longmore went on to receive the Distinguished Service Medal. Mr. Whittaker wants to change the custom paint job he gave the 65-ton machine, which is still in working order, to a traditional army colour of green and black. Despite being parked at the industrial estate for decades, the tank only became well known this month after a photograph of it went viral on Facebook. The tank was shown decorated with poppies and adorned with a Union Jack ahead of Remembrance Sunday. Mr. Whittaker's son Steve has offered to paint the tank, but members of the public have also been in contact, saying they would be willing to undertake the work for free.
A veterinary practice has relocated to a larger site in Willenhall to provide essential care and support to sick animals. Cavern Vets has moved into a new purpose-built surgery at 48 to 50 High Road to meet growing demand for its services. The site is twice as large as its former premises, providing three consultation rooms, two theatres and a separate dog and cat waiting area, as well as separate wards. As well as expanding its square footage, the firm is also increasing the services it can offer, kitting the building out with the highest standard veterinary medical equipment so that staff can perform more procedures, including x-rays, on site. This has helped Cavern Vets to create six new jobs in the local area. It has recently hired a new veterinary surgeon and is currently looking to recruit a further two veterinary nurses. The extra space has helped the practice to cope better with the coronavirus pandemic, offering a wide range of services as possible. Stuart Lloyd, director and veterinary surgeon at Cavern Vets, said, "We've seen an increasing demand for our services over the past few years, and it became apparent that we would need to invest in a new site to meet this. It's helped us to continue treating patients through the coronavirus outbreak and will enable us to provide vital services as we move into the new lockdown measures."
Work is progressing to demolish two long-standing high-rise blocks from Dudley Skyline. New photos show the demolition of Arley and Compton Court in Netherton is well on track. The demolition of the two blocks will make way for new housing. Arley Court has already been brought down to the ground level, while only nine floors are still standing at Compton Court. Work will continue to tear down the blocks during the second national coronavirus lockdown. Dudley Council appointed contractors earlier this year to begin the demolition at the two blocks. While the demolition of neighbouring Wells and Manor Court is expected to start in the coming weeks, new housing developments will be built in their place. Councillor Laura Taylor, Dudley Council's Cabinet Member for Housing and Community Services, said, "I'm really pleased the demolition of Arley and Compton Flats is on track and workers can remain on site over the next few weeks as permitted under the government's latest coronavirus guidelines."
Fruit trees have been planted at three Wolverhampton schools in a bid to provide healthy food to children and help meet climate targets in the city. Councillor Beverly Mumenabadi helped plant the trees at Bilson CV Primary, Windsor Nursery School, St Mary and St John's Catholic Primary Academy, as well as at the ASAN Workspace Community Hub. She said she wanted to support the three schools and community centres in her ward become more sustainable and enlisted the support of House Builders Lovers, who donated the 12 apple and pear trees for the project. In 2019, Wolverhampton Council declared a climate emergency and set a target of becoming carbon neutral by 2028. Among the steps the authority has pledged to take to achieve this is purchasing renewable energy, using smart meters, reducing printing, and developing a tree planting programme across Wolverhampton. Councillor Mumin Abadi, who is the city's youngest member representing Ettingshaw, said the trees will not only provide healthy snacks, but provide environmental benefits. These include absorbing carbon dioxide to slow climate change and habitat for wildlife, and slow the runoff of rainwater into drains to reduce flooding.
Coming up, we find out why Wolverhampton managed to avoid being bombed during the Blitz, and we have a short story about an encounter of the third kind. But now we have a look at two new developments in technology that are helping people with sight loss, brought to us by Edward.
Freeview has started the rollout of its accessible TV guide, available on channel 555 through Freeview Play devices. Freeview's accessible TV guide will make it simpler for viewers with accessibility needs, such as visual impairments or hearing loss, to discover and find content more easily. The guide was developed with insight from viewers and advocacy groups, including the Royal National Institute of Blind People, SCOPE, and the Digital Accessibility Centre. Even before launch, it won the plaudits of the industry, scooping a gold at this year's Connected TV Awards for advancing the user experience. The new TV guide meets all four requirements outlined in Ofcom's amended code for electronic programme guides, with a high contrast user interface, screen magnification, a text-to-speech function, and the ability to customise the guide to suit the viewer's needs, with audio description, subtitles, or sign language. The guide works in the same way across all Freeview Play devices and can be used straight out of the box. John Patton, Innovation and Technology Officer at RNIB, said this new guide is a truly innovative step forward in TV accessibility for blind and partially sighted people. Once the rollout is complete, the guide will be available to anyone with a Freeview Play television or set-top box, and the channel number 555 is easy to remember due to the tactile dot of the 5 button. This will make a huge difference in TV viewing for millions of people with sight loss across the UK. Currently available on television sets from Panasonic, LG and Toshiba, the new TV guide will be rolling out across a full range of Freeview Play devices over the coming months, alongside regular updates that will incorporate user feedback. More features are set to launch on the guide, including integration of Freeview Play's on-demand content recommendations, which will also be filtered according to each viewer's accessibility needs. In other technology news, iPhones can now tell users with sight loss where and how far away people are. Apple has packed an interesting new accessibility feature into their latest iPhone models, a system that detects the presence of and their distance to people in the view of the iPhone's camera. Apple's iPhone 12 Pro and Pro Max make use of the new LiDAR sensor on the back of the phones to detect how close other people are to the user, something Apple has named people detection. LiDAR is a type of depth sensor that helps with augmented reality apps and serves as the eyes of self-driving cars. Now, Apple is applying it to accessibility in an effort to help people who have vision problems to better navigate the world around them. When someone is shopping, for instance, they'll be able to turn on people detection on their iPhone 12 Pro to let them know when they need to move forward in the queue. Or, for example, if someone walking on the pavement can get alerts about how close other people are as they pass by. People who are blind or have low vision can also use the feature to figure out if a seat is available at a table or on public transport, and they'll be able to maintain proper social distancing when going through health screenings or security queues at an airport. People detection will be able to tell the person's distance from the user in feet or metres, and it works up to 15 feet or 5 metres away. Anyone in the iPhone 12 Pro's wide-angle camera view will be detected by the feature. If there are multiple people nearby, people detection will give the distance from one closest to the iPhone user. The user gets feedback from people detection in four possible ways, and they can be used in any combination. All can be customised in settings. One way to get information about the person's closeness is through an audible readout. The phone will say out loud 15, 14, 13, and so on, when it comes to feet. It gives the distance in half metres for people who choose that unit of measurement. The iPhone 12 Pro users can also set a threshold distance with two distinctly different audio tones. One is for when people are outside that distance, and another is for when people are closer to the user. The third type of alert is through haptic feedback. The farther away a person is, the lower and slower a physical pulsing of the haptics. The closer the person gets, the faster the haptics buzz. There's also the option to get a visual readout on the screen itself. In that case, it'll say how far away the person is, and a dotted line will point out where the person is on the screen.
Both those developments sound really useful. Thanks, Edward. Now we have our final local news roundup, starting with Ian.
Wolverhampton's famous bin men swapped dancing for singing with A Shot at Christmas Number One. The three stars, Jack Johnson, Henry Wright and Adrian Breakwell, went viral with their popular TikTok videos shot in the city during the first lockdown. They attracted thousands of views on social media through their routines, which included Grease and Baywatch-themed dances, and now they have set their sights on the Christmas Number One spot with their song Boogie Round the Bins at Christmas Time, set to be released on November the 20th. Jack said, "We were doing the dancing and the like, and we're talking 2 or 3 months ago. We were coming down a road in Penn and we started singing. Just randomly, and we were like, why don't we do a Christmas song? We talked about it, and by the end of the day, we had a tune and lyrics in mind. The track will cost 99p and will be available on iTunes and on Android when it's released, with the Bin Men making a large donation to a charity in the area." The 37-year-old said, "Obviously the idea is to get that Christmas Number One spot, but if we get in the chart and raise some money for charity, we'll be happy."
Tipping beer away can make bugs tipsy, warns Severn Trent, with pub owners being warned about tipping large quantities of beer down the drain during lockdown. Severn Trent said that during the first few months of national lockdown, it authorised the disposal of over 3.5 million litres of beer, which is about 6 million pints. Severn Trent's sewer blockages lead, Grant Mitchell, said, "Despite the news that pubs will still be able to sell takeaway pints, we know that many establishments will unfortunately need to dispose of excess beer during lockdown. It's really important that any spoiled beer is disposed of correctly, as there are some risks associated with tipping large quantities into the sewer system all at once. Not only could it flood the sewer pipe network and escape into the environment, but too much alcohol can also impair the bugs that help clean our sewage, making them less effective at their job. We also need to make sure that if lots of alcohol is disposed of all at the same time, our smaller sewage works don't get overwhelmed and flood."
A Dudley Zoo trainee keeper is set to run 13.1 miles in aid of the zoo's COVID-19 Animal Care Fund. Chloe Riley, 21, who is based on the farm section, will swap her keeper uniform for a Lemur onesie and trainers for the half marathon challenge around Dudley Zoo's 40-acre site. She said, "Being a keeper, I get to see the impact that COVID-19 has had at the zoo, so I wanted to do something to help, as I couldn't stand by and watch the place I love struggle. I wanted to do a half marathon, as I've never run this far before, but I wanted to do something that would be a challenge and would be worth donations. And those who know the zoo know it isn't the flattest place, so it certainly won't be easy." Chloe will be running around the site's current one-way system on her scheduled day off and anticipates it will take her between 10 to 15 laps to achieve the distance. Zoo Director Derek Grove added, "We are so grateful for everyone's support during this unprecedented time for the zoo. We are very lucky to have such devoted staff at Dudley Zoo and Castle who are always keen to go the extra mile for their animals. And Chloe's no exception with this adventurous fundraiser. We wish her the best of luck and we'll be cheering her on all along the way."
A Black Country College's campus is set to star in a new BBC One film series. Wolverhampton College's Paget Road campus will play the part of Bygate Hill Secondary School in Red, White and Blue. Red, White and Blue is the third in Academy Award-winning filmmaker Steve McQueen's Small Axe collection of films, which starts on Sunday. The five original films that make up the Small Axe collection are set in the 1960s to mid-1980s and focus on the lives of London's West Indian community and how they shaped their lives despite racism and discrimination. Filming took place in classrooms, offices, and a science lab on the campus over two weekends in October 2019. And to ensure the areas used looked realistic, brightly coloured woodwork in classrooms and corridors was painted brown, and modern college furniture, fixtures, and fittings were replaced with that of the era. Michael Dixon, Head of Faculty for Technology, Creative and Academic Studies at Wolverhampton College, said, "We were thrilled to be asked if the Paget Road campus could be used as Bygate School in the series. The building was actually constructed in 1962, so it is a fitting setting, and it was interesting to see how the rooms used were adapted from modern workspaces and offices to look like rooms from the era." Red, White and Blue, which will be shown on Sunday, November the 29th, stars Star Wars actor John Boyega and spotlights the true story of Leroy Logan, who at a young age saw his father assaulted by two policemen, motivating him to join the Metropolitan Police and change their racist attitudes from within.
A lock of Elvis Presley's hair could sell for thousands of pounds at an auction in Staffordshire this week. A few strands of dark hair from the singer are set to go under the hammer in a music memorabilia sale at Hanson's Auctioneers on November the 19th, with a guide price of between £4,000 and £6,000. The hair was collected by one of the star's hairdressers, Homer Gilliland, and attached to a souvenir card which states, "This card contains a lock of hair from the King of Rock and Roll, as cut by Mr. Gill of Memphis, memories of which in future years, yours they will always be, Elvis, 1935 to 1977. It is being sold together with a racquetball used by Elvis by 75-year-old lifelong fan and retired building site manager Tom Unwin. He said, "I bought the hair about 10 years ago and the racket in 2002 from a man who was running an Elvis fan club I belonged to. I've been a huge Elvis fan since I was 15. I've collected memorabilia all my life. Everything you can imagine to do with Elvis. I've been to his home in Graceland, Memphis, Tennessee, a few times and met members of his band and his wife, Priscilla Presley. I'm selling now because I've had so much enjoyment from showing my Elvis memorabilia to friends over the years. I would like others to experience that same enjoyment."
Sports still to come, but now we have the man with all the facts. It's Flashback Roger.
Hi, everybody. This is Roger again with our flashback section, where we take a look back at some of the events that happened during the week of the 16th to the 22nd of November of past years, and where you'll find the answers to the quiz questions that were set earlier. On November the 17th, 1869, the Suez Canal opened, a north-south waterway connecting the Mediterranean and the Red Sea. It opened up. It cut the trip from London to Bombay almost in half. It took 10 years to build after Guy de Lesseps obtained permission from the Egyptian government to form the Suez Canal Company. On November the 18th, Steamboat Willie, Disney's first cartoon and synchronized sound, is released. Mickey Mouse's voice was provided by none other than Walt Disney himself. The Disney Company celebrates Mickey's birthday on this day. Mickey had first appeared in the silent version of Plain Crazy 6 months earlier. November the 20th in 1998, the first piece of the International Space Station, known as the ISS, is launched. It was the first part of what would become the largest man-made object to orbit the Earth, and is expected to operate until 2028. The first ISS component was launched in 1998, and the first long-term residents arrived on the 2nd of November in the year 2000. The station has since been continuously occupied for over 19 years so far. November the 20th, 1992, Windsor Castle, the home of the British royal family for 850 years, catches fire, causing extensive damage. Repairs to the castle cost £36.5 million and resulted in Buckingham Palace, the Queen's other official residence, being open to the public to help pay for the restoration work. Now, do you remember the question that was a bit of a catchphrase? Who shot JR? I'm sure some of you do. Well, on November the 21st, 1980, 78 million people watched Dallas to find out Kristin shot JR, making this the highest-rated TV episode to date. Kristin was JR's scheming sister-in-law and mistress who shot him in a fit of anger. JR didn't press charges, however, as Kristin claimed she was pregnant with his child. On November the 22nd in 1963, US President John F. Kennedy is assassinated in Dallas by Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, if, like me, you're old enough, you'll not only remember it happening, you'll also remember exactly where you were and what you were doing. I was 13 at the time, and I was in the middle of my maths homework when the news broke on the BBC. What were you doing? Have a good think about that. It won't be in the quiz questions, though. But anyway, that's the flashback for now. See you next time. So Roger saying ta-ra for now. Ta-ra.
Thanks, Roger. Don't forget, Mina will be back with the answers to the flashback quiz. But for now, she's here to tell us about the weather. So, Mina, how's the weather looking?
The weather for this week is dry and settled, but there's little chance of persistent sunlight as clouds remain constant. Light winds will be blowing from a southwesterly direction for most of the week, and you can again expect cool but moderate temperatures for the time of year, hovering typically between 8 and 12 degrees with low UV levels all week. The sunrise and sunset times are 7:44 a.m. for the sunrise and 4:05 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 20th of November, we have sunny intervals and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 9 degrees. On Saturday 21st of November, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 8 degrees. Going into Sunday 22nd, expect sunny intervals and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 10 degrees. And on Monday 23rd of November through to Thursday 26th of November, we have across the week light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 10 degrees expected. So, that's your weather forecast for the week. Enjoy the weather.
I always try to, Mina. Some days are easier than others, though. Anyway, now with some news on the Baggies and Wolves, it's Ian.
Wolves boss Nuno Espirito Santo has won the Premier League Manager of the Month award following an unbeaten October. Nuno has been given the gong after picking up 10 points from a possible 12 last month, beating Fulham, Leeds and Crystal Palace while drawing with Newcastle. He got the nod ahead of Southampton's Ralf Hasenhüttl, Jose Mourinho at Tottenham, West Ham boss David Moyes and Villa's Dean Smith. Collecting the award alongside first-team performance analysts Ed Ames and John Boston, and ahead of performance and research Matt Pearson, the Portuguese said, "Thank you so much for the award, but like all the awards, it is for all the people involved. All the people behind the scenes are very important, so we appreciate and we thank you." Nuno was the pick of supporters and a panel of football experts after his side conceded just once against Newcastle and kept clean sheets in their other three games. All the three matches in October were very difficult, but what we were able to do during the month was to bounce back from our performances the previous month, said Nuno. We nearly did it against Newcastle until the final minutes, so it was not such a perfect month, but it was a very good month of performances. The three clean sheets were very good, and everything starts there. The defence played well, but all the team was very focused on our organisation and our shape, which enabled us to produce good things in the offensive areas, score goals and create a lot of chances. Darnell Furlong says he and his teammates are determined to keep Albion where they belong, in the Premier League. The Baggies, who won promotion back in July, have endured a tough start to life back in English football's top tier, with Slaven Bilic's side winless in 8 outings. But, in the main, performances have been better than results, with the team arguably deserving more than what they got in clashes against Chelsea, Burnley, Brighton and Tottenham. Furlong, who joined the Baggies in July last year, enjoyed a brief taste of Premier League football while a QPR player in 2015. And now he's back, the defender is determined to make sure he and Albion stay there. I said when I came into this club that it needs to be where it belongs, in the Premier League, the 25-year-old said. It's a massive privilege to be here, and we've got a goal of staying in the league this year, and it's one I'm confident we are going to achieve. The Premier League is a different kind of ruthless. You switch off for a second and someone has got away from you, or they are in behind. And players don't tend to miss in the Premier League, so it's a big step up, but we are ready for it. I've always prided myself on working hard and doing the best I can. We don't just want to stay in the division. We want to play nice football and get as high as we can. We won't just settle for being here. The Premier League have announced that all fixtures from Saturday the 21st of November and throughout Christmas and the New Year period will be made available to fans to watch live in the UK. All matches will now be shown via existing Sky Sports, BT Sport, Amazon and BBC services. BT will screen Albion's trip to Manchester on Saturday at 8 p.m, while Wolves' clash with Southampton at Molineux will now take place on Monday night and be televised on Sky Sports. The following week, Albion are again playing at 8 p.m. on a Saturday, but this time at the Hawthorns against Sheffield United, with this fixture being aired by Sky Sports. Wolves, meanwhile, are away a day later on Sunday the 29th, visiting the Emirates Stadium to take on the Gunners, with a kick-off time of 7 p.m. This fixture will also be broadcast by Sky Sports.
Thanks, Ian. Now we have David with a historical story about World War II.
How Wolverhampton escaped the Blitz after Coventry burned. 80 years ago this week, a West Midlands city burned in a Blitz that destroyed its beloved cathedral and killed 568. The pain was not supposed to be restricted to Coventry. The German Luftwaffe had also planned to flatten Wolverhampton, but for some reason the attack never materialised. Coventry was today marking the anniversary of the devastating air raids which caused widespread destruction. It was Target 53, according to our Enigma codebreakers, with Wolverhampton Target 51 and Birmingham Target 52. The raid on Wolverhampton even had its own codename, Einheitsbrace. But while Birmingham was hit by bombing raids, Wolverhampton escaped a Coventry-style attack. One theory is that the Germans called off the attack on the Black Country after air defences were beefed up to protect major urban areas. The distant glow in the sky 80 years ago told West Midlanders this was a bad one. By morning, Coventry was a destroyed city. Its dazed inhabitants picked their way through smoking rubble and shattered glass. That raid of November the 14th, 1940, codenamed Moonlight Sonata, was to change the face of air warfare. Involving around 500 German bombers, it was highly successful. Almost 30 vital factories were hit, halting production for the war effort for many months afterwards. As the raid had intensified, a call for help was sent out, and firefighters were dispatched from Wolverhampton, Coseley, Bilston, Wensfield, Tipton, Penkridge, and even from as far as Wellington in Shropshire. Ambulances were also sent from Wolverhampton, although by the time they arrived, all they could do was collect bodies. During the massive bombardment, a firestorm was started that decimated much of the city centre and destroyed or damaged more than 43,000 homes, just over half of the city's total housing. Tram lines were so badly damaged that the system never operated again. Steered by a guidance beam to ensure accuracy, the Luftwaffe aircraft dropped 500 tons of high explosive, 30,000 incendiaries and 50 landmines in a rolling attack that lasted 10 hours. Cities can be rebuilt. What could not be overcome was the human suffering. The raid had killed 568 men, women and children. Overnight, a new verb entered the German language, Coventrieren, to coventrate, which meant to raise to the ground or annihilate. That raid was intended to be the first of a hat-trick of devastating raids in the Midlands that month, the other two targets being Birmingham and Wolverhampton. For some reason, Wolverhampton was spared. The Moonlight Sonata operation had a fundamental impact on a senior officer at the Air Ministry in London. Air Marshal Arthur Harris noted that it revealed the principle of starting so many fires at the same time that no emergency services could successfully get them under control. He was later to become head of Bomber Command and deliver to Nazi Germany many times over the punishment that was meted out to Coventry that November 1940 night. In the aftermath of the bombing, more than half of the population fled. One observer wrote, "The overwhelmingly dominant feeling was utter helplessness. The tremendous impact of the previous night had left people practically speechless in many cases. There were more open signs of hysteria, terror, neurosis observed in one evening than during the whole of the past 2 months in all areas." One of the first firebombs scored a direct hit on the medieval cathedral's roof, burning away oak timbers and melting lead sheets with the intensity of the blaze. Water supplies for the firefighters dried up, leaving them helpless as it burned down. As dawn broke, there was nothing left but a shell. It was the only English cathedral to be destroyed during the war, although not the only one hit. The decision was immediately taken to rebuild it. Services were still held in the bombed-out building, and it quickly became a metaphor for the nation's struggle against tyranny. By 1947, Coventry had adopted its first German twin city, Kiel. Dresden followed in 1956. The ruined cathedral now stands for International Peace and Reconciliation. In the post-war era, various conspiracy theories have grown up, suggesting that Winston Churchill was tipped off about the Coventry raid, but chose to do nothing for fear of betraying the Enigma code-breaking secrets to the Germans. However, defences against the nightly raids were very weak at the time in any event. Coventry's anti-aircraft guns are said to have blasted off 6,700 shells at the aerial enemy, but only one of the raiders was shot down that night by anti-aircraft guns, and that was hit miles away by a gun battery at Derby. Roaming RAF night fighters drew a complete blank. Although the Coventry raid became symbolic of the whole Blitz, it was not Britain's most deadly attack. For instance, a raid on London in May 1941 left more than 1,400 civilians dead. Nor was that of November 1940 the last on the Midland city. There were further big attacks in April 1941, and in total, Coventry suffered 41 air raids. And Wolverhampton? It was earmarked for a big attack at around the same time as the November raid on Coventry. British codebreakers deduced that Wolverhampton was target number 51, Birmingham was 52, and Coventry was 53. First Coventry was hit, then Birmingham, so Wolverhampton was clearly next. Anti-aircraft gun defences were urgently beefed up, but the Wolverhampton raid never took place, one theory being that the Germans cancelled it on learning the defences had been improved. Eavesdropping on a conversation between two German prisoners, one said after the Coventry and Birmingham raids that there was to be one on Wolverhampton under the code name Einheitspreis. This translated as unit price, as at Woolworths, where most things cost sixpence, the store's name, an echo of the target town of Wolverhampton. Perhaps that German code name was fitting, as although Wolverhampton did not escape bombing, compared with Coventry and Birmingham, it did not pay such a high cost.
Thanks for that piece, David. Now, did you get the questions right in the quiz earlier? Well, now's the time to find out. Take it away, Mina.
Here are the answers to this week's flashback quiz. So, question one. The Suez Canal runs through which country? The answer is Egypt. Question 2. What was the name of Disney's first cartoon? It was Steamboat Willie. Question 3. In what year was the first part of International Space Station launched? This was in 1998. Question 4. In what year was the fire that damaged Windsor Castle? And the answer here is 1992. Question 5. Who shot JR in the TV show Dallas? It was Kristen. And finally, question 6. In what year was President JF Kennedy assassinated? And this was, of course, in 1963. More flashback on This Week in History next week. And as a bonus this week, I have a brain teaser for you. Are you ready? Here we go. What am I? I begin with an E. I end with an E. I only contain one letter, but I am not the letter E. The answer to that will be revealed next week. Now, to end this edition, we have for you a flight of fancy about a canal-side encounter with a being from another world, written and narrated by the local author, Graham Fisher.
Now, in my time as an inland waterways enthusiast travelling around the highways and byways of the canals and rivers dotting our fair land, I have seen many strange things. And I don't like making a fuss, so not a lot of people know that I have in fact been abducted by aliens. No kidding. twice as it happens, which excuses my glib insouciance of being there, done that, got the T-shirt. The first occasion was in the 1970s when I was beamed aboard the mothership and subdued with a cocktail of alcohol-based drugs. Or maybe just alcohol. Strange, pointy-headed creatures told me I was their best mate and questioned me relentlessly about potatoes before beaming me back to earth and depositing me about 11 o'clock at night, still reeking of intoxicants, in a gutter, where, through my haze, I started telling another pointy-headed one in a blue uniform.
"And you're my blessed mate too, officer,"
before being bundled into a van. And that, your worships, concluded the case for the defence. Alien abduction. I was rewarded for my pains with a stern entreaty, drunk and disorderly, fined £5, and from now on, act your age. I remain defiant. I can pay the fine I quipped, but I don't do impressions. Yet how I scorned inwardly at those disbelieving fools when next I saw a pointy-headed alien on my television screen and that eerily familiar voice telling an unsuspecting world, "First they boil them for 20 minutes, then they smash them all to pieces. Ha ha ha, they must be very primitive." Point of information, you had to be watching the telly of a certain era to appreciate that one. Ask an elderly relative. So that's their plan, I realised. World domination by potatoes. Was I really the only one who could see it? I thought no more of it until one day recently, when I was innocently manicuring the gerbils, I found myself being whisked by a tractor beam up to the mothership.
"Oh no, not him again,"
I heard a voice from the past before sinking under the influence of their vile, intoxicating potions.
"Have all the bars in all the gin joints on all the motherships. He has to pick ours."
It might help here if you also ask your elderly relative about a man named Bogart. Oh well. I drifted in and out of consciousness, cajoled by the crackling of a radio transmitter.
"Mothership calling base,"
said my captor, as he simultaneously fed himself spoonfuls of what to me looked curiously like mashed potato.
"We have interrogated the Earthling, and he warns us of vast migrations. Large numbers of the population are leaving their comfortable homes and transferring to long tubes of metal that they propel through shallow water very slowly, mostly pushing mud along the way. These long tubes are subject to frequent hold-ups and are often rained upon."
An authoritative voice on the other end demanded,
"And what do they do then?"
A pause for thought, as if in disbelief before the response.
"They meet other like-minded souls for up to several days at a time. They drink, make merry, and cavort in celebrations. Some of the..."
Can't keep this accent up.
"Some of them offer vast sums of currency in exchange for more long metal tubes, and others even give all their worldly belongings to stay on them permanently. Then they turn around their long metal tubes and return from whence they come. What shall we do, master?"
From somewhere across a vast universe came the chilling reply.
"Leave them in peace for another 50 years. We cannot yet take them over, for indeed they are obviously still very primitive." Ha ha ha!
Next thing I recall, I awoke in the early hours in a field by a canal, my head throbbing. From the gloom, a figure with a pointy head and blue uniform approached me. "Where is this?" I inquired. "You're at a waterways festival in the Black Country," came the voice. "Have you been drinking, sir?"
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org. or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!